This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Osteothera plus Ipraflavone from Claire Labs. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone is a comprehensive formulation that supports optimal bone density. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone is vital for supporting the body in the formation and regeneration of bone to ensure your optimal skeletal health. For more information and to purchase Osteothera plus Ipraflavone, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And I'm looking forward to this podcast because today I get to talk to one of my favorite go-to experts on the subject of probiotics. You know, there's been a lot of talk about probiotics these days. And in the spirit of mainstream media, they're talking smack about probiotics. Probiotics, along with many other supplements, have been the subject of derision in the press. And recently an article appeared with the lurid title, "Probiotics Are Mostly Useless and Can Actually Hurt You." Well, we're going to take a look at that contention with an expert on the subject of probiotics. In fact, she's the author of The Probiotic Cure. She's a certified clinical nutritionist and a practitioner as well. She's known to you because she's a frequent contributor here to Intelligent Medicine. She's Marty Whittakin. She's also written a great book entitled Natural Alternatives to Nexium, Maalox, Tagamet, Prilosec, and Other Acid Blockers. And I find her a real kindred spirit in terms of her understanding of the vital role that the microbiome plays. She's well ahead of the curve in appreciating the downsides of proton pump inhibitors, these powerful acid-blocking medications, and the importance of supplementing with probiotics to restore balance in the gastrointestinal tract. So, Marty, it's a pleasure talking to you again. Welcome.
Oh, it's always a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Indeed. Well, okay, so there was this article, and it appeared in New Scientist. Boy, that sounds pretty legit. New Scientist. Damn, that's got to be authoritative. New Scientist makes the claim that probiotics are mostly useless and can actually hurt you. This is all based on a study from the prestigious Weizmann Institute in Israel. And they actually specialize in advanced microbiome research, so they should know whereof they speak. But I recently wrote an article on this subject, I'm sure you've had a chance to read it, which suggests that the findings of the Weizmann Institute were grossly misrepresented by New Scientist. And in the press, that sort of parrots the headlines sometimes of these lurid exposés.
Fake news has gotten kind of a bad name,
yeah,
but
right.
It really is. When and I started being suspicious of how the media glosses over things and restructures them in there to suit a narrative that they already have decided on. Way back in the 90s, when I was working on the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act in Washington, and I would be there. I would see the news firsthand. And then what I would see in the paper was like, what? How did
exactly
they do that? They don't dig deep. They don't take what I think logically people should do is put something in context. And if there are, and I found this when I wrote the book, The Probiotic Cure, I looked at 1,000 abstracts and then a lot of the studies behind those. If there are sometimes tens of thousands of studies showing something positive, what do they put in the headline? I think it's because it's kind of man bites dog.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They will pick up on this one little scrap of evidence, and they won't even report it accurately. As you pointed out, they kind of miss the point of what the study was, and they're just as happy to report on a bad study, one that wasn't well structured, as they are on a good one. We just can't depend on them. People need to listen to you.
Indeed. You know, that's precisely what I've said in the past, is that after a while it gets boring. You know, man bites dog, man bites dog, man bites dog. You know, probiotics are beneficial. Probiotics are terrific for you. And then you know, we've got to flip the script and dog bites, man, whoa, you mean all those probiotics I've been taking, all that Danon yogurt I've been consuming because we hear that it's good for you, it turns out useless, waste of money, and may even be bad for you. That's what this article purports to say. But yeah, actually, in this case, it's not a matter of bad science. I mean, there are plenty of bad scientific papers out there. But this actually, I mean, I looked at the paper, and frankly, you know, you got to take a, you know, a cup of coffee or, you know, some no-dos when you read these papers, as you know.
Oh,
because,
really?
Because they are, you really get lost in the weeds, and it's a very, very detailed study, and it's good work. And, you know, one of the points that they made is, in the study, is they said that in some cases, probiotics don't colonize the gastrointestinal tract. Can we therefore assume that probiotics are worthless? Is that the logical conclusion from that finding?
Well, that's kind of like saying, well, when you drink water, you just pee it up. So let's not bother drinking water anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
It does. They do something good while they're there. And one of the studies I remember seeing, actually more than once when I was doing that investigation, is that you take one probiotic and or you eat some fermented dairy that has certain organisms in it. Those don't increase, but others do. They act to stimulate the growth of other beneficial bacteria, as well as you pointed out in your article, sending messages to the immune system and generally changing the environment. We have thousands of kinds, different families of bacteria in our gut. And what we want to do is provide a good home for all of them, not necessarily just bump the heck out of one particular strain.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, I've actually heard the analogy that in some ways probiotics can be looked at like generals on the battlefield. You know, if you survey the battlefield from above and you see the victorious army sweeping away its foes, you don't necessarily see the general. You know, if you take a 20,000 foot above view, but the general is actually directing that army. And it may be that even when it's impossible to detect the imprint of a probiotic in the gastrointestinal tract, and I've seen this again and again, and perhaps you've seen this in some of your clients and patients, is they take probiotics, but the probiotics actually don't appear on stool tests. But there still is an effect. The probiotics may direct the activity of other flora in the intestinal tract through a variety of mechanisms, right?
Well, exactly. And as you pointed out, they may also find a home somewhere. If they stayed inside, they're not going to be in the stool sample.
Right.
So I was at a conference, a symposium the last few days, and it's one of the things they pointed out is that the stool sample doesn't always reflect what's going on inside. Some mm-hmm. of them are just kind of hanging on for dear life there. They like it there.
Exactly. Well, so in this study, in fact, what they did is these researchers were so detailed in their inquiry that not only did they look at stool samples, but they went up there with an endoscope, and they found that sometimes when you couldn't find stuff in the stool, you could find it further up in the gastrointestinal tract. You could find it in the intestine. You could find it even in the duodenum, which is part of the small intestine. You know, that these have an impact, but by the time they get pooped out, they're not detectable. So they still have established a niche. But the problem is we're looking for bugs in all the wrong places.
Well, exactly. And there are just so many ways that they benefit. And all this, you mentioned all the yogurt and so on. Those bacteria don't necessarily colonize, but that doesn't mean you haven't seen a benefit, because they've been able to show that if you eat Activia twice a day, and you can afford it, and you can afford the calories, it does improve regularity. Well, they're not colonizing those bacteria, but they are having a positive effect.
And apropos of yogurts, so recently there was a survey that said that 50% of supermarket yogurts contain more than the requisite amount of sugar that you should consume. So that isn't necessarily the answer. And, you know, yes, you can get a low-fat, low-sugar yogurt, but those aren't necessarily going to do the trick.
Oh, and in fact, the ones that are lower in sugar, unless they just have no added sweetener at all and no jam in the bottom and so on, they're sweetened with artificial sweeteners.
Yeah. Which damage the microbiome.
To be hard on our good bacteria.
Yeah.
So they giveth and they taketh away.
Indeed, indeed. So this sort of brings us to the subject of, you know, our favorite way of replenishing the gastrointestinal tract. I think we're on the same page about that. You know, there are different probiotics out there. They all kind of go with body counts. They have millions and billions and trillions of CFUs. Is that the right approach?
Well, it's kind of the American way. If a little is good, more is better. But we're measuring the wrong thing. What we want from our bacteria is what they make for us. All these, the orders that the general is sending out, all of these substances that, everything from vitamin K that helps keep the calcium going into the bones rather than the arteries, to enzymes and short chain fatty acids to keep the gut healthy and all of those things. So when you have a freeze dried white powder type product, which virtually all of the probiotic products are that. They culture them quickly, like overnight. They separate the colonies. They remove the food supply, freeze dry them, and then they mix the different species together at that point, put them in a capsule, and if it survives all that, and then it gets through the UPS truck and gets to the store and you swallow it and it gets into the gut.
But there's even an intervening step. It gets to the store and then maybe that merchandise doesn't move that well. And maybe the, and I got to say, I used to run a store myself, and the whole idea was like, well, what do we do with these things? We got to keep them in the refrigerator to keep them viable. And sometimes, I mean, you know, I get a call at 4 a.m, like, our refrigeration units have broken down. Can you come down here and, check things out? That was one of the joys of running a health food store.
Oh, I've been there, done that.
Been there, done that, right?
Yeah. And even if it survives, your stomach acid gets into the gut, the capsule opens up, and then all these bacteria that have never seen each other before, they start duking it out for territory. They've got to find something to eat and mm-hmm. hope that you ate what they need, yep. and chances are you didn't. And then they start multiplying and making what we need. And the reason that I like Dr. O'Hara so much is because it's a fermented food. Mm-hmm. They've been feeding for 3 years or up to 5 years, the bacteria, foods that we should be eating. Mm. And they've already taken them and pulled the magic out of them.
That's interesting. You know, I've never really thought of it that way, but in your usual ingenious way, you formulated it. These bacteria have had an opportunity to establish an equilibrium, that they have coexisted in a culture, in a carefully monitored culture. You know, obviously, it's taken years for them to figure out the right secret sauce, the right combination of bacteria, the right prebiotics, the right temperature, the right duration of culture to produce a stable blend of beneficial flora, which are more likely to be compatible with our digestive tracts. And, you know, right, it is kind of an experiment. It's like, okay, great, you know, we take some white powder that grows in a culture medium, and it, you know, grows like crazy, but then we mix it with other things. You know, maybe we have a multi-strain probiotic, which is probably better, you know, because it's a broad spectrum. But we just don't know how those things interact, and because they're novel when they meet in your gastrointestinal tract.
Yeah, it's just kind of a crapshoot, and I'm personally a little worried about.
That's a bit of a pun, actually, Marty, inadvertently.
That was unintended, but yes, it was. And we don't know really what's going to happen with them. But if we put a whole lot of, say, we have these thousands of families, and if we put in a few billion of one, I suspect our immune system looks at that and says, I don't think that's supposed to be here, at least in that amount, and mounts an immune response. So you've got your own immune system going right after them as well. But if you start with something that is food and is based on fermented foods that have been in use for millennia, body knows what to do with it, doesn't get excited.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a comprehensive formulation that supports optimal bone density to ensure your future bone health. It's Osteothera plus Ipraflavone from Claire Labs. Osteothera plus Ipraflavone helps inhibit bone resorption and promotes new bone formation. The Osteothera plus Ipraflavone formulation is vital for supporting the body in the formation and regeneration of bone to ensure your optimal skeletal health. I believe in Osteothera plus Ipraflavone so much that I've included it in the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, and I recommend it to my patients. For more information and to purchase Osteothera plus Ipraflavone, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Marty Wittekin. In another study that was a negative study on probiotics that also got a lot of press, it was an interesting headline, probiotics cause brain fog. And there may be a kernel of truth to that. Not with the type of probiotics that we favor, but if you massively infuse people with one species of lactobacillus, and they sort of set this up for failure in a way. They took people who already were experiencing SIBO, and they gave them powerful lactobacillus. And we know that lactobacillus, well, the word lacto means that they actually manufacture lactic acid. And some people, when they get probiotics, there's a excess production of lactic acid, and it can make them feel worse. And oh, by the way, that lactic acid goes to the brain, and it may give you brain fog. And I thought, well, that surely is an interesting observation. Hey, we've been talking about this in the field of complementary medicine. We used to call this the yeast connection. You know, we call this dysbiosis. People get brain symptoms from their microbiome. And there was something to it. And maybe, you know, infusing people with the wrong probiotics under the wrong circumstances, if they already have bacterial overgrowth, that could be counterproductive.
I think there might be another angle, and you touched on it there, that when we have somebody who has a yeast overgrowth and we give them probiotics or any remedy that's going to kill off the yeast, when the yeast die, mm-hmm. they release toxins,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that cause brain fog. Mm-hmm. So when you're on the road to getting better, you might feel worse a little bit. So I think they don't separate that or look at that in the context of, well, maybe that's a sort of a Herxheimer reaction that you're getting. So it could have been any number of things going on there, but it's certainly not something that I have ever seen with Dr. O'Hara's, because it supports the entire microbiome. It doesn't upset the balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you would have to have an awful lot of overgrowth of lactobacillus, like a massive overproduction of lactic acid, to experience those types of symptoms. And I think in this particular study, they sort of stacked the deck. They took people who were already susceptible, people who had SIBO, already had excess bacteria, and then they fed them powerful probiotics, and they observed an uptick in their production of lactic acid. So there, you know, again, these studies generate headlines, but they require interpretation. And yes, there may be a kernel of truth at the heart of these studies, but you know, we have to understand how they apply to the average individual. And for the average person, this is maybe a theoretical possibility, but it's not in the realm of our experience, right?
I think there are just too many studies that almost look like they were set up to prove that what we do doesn't work. And certainly there is an awful lot of control by the pharmaceutical industry for trying to keep everything as it is and solve every problem with a medication. But I always try to put things in a broad historical context. And have people been eating fermented food since they started writing stuff down? Yes. As far as the archaeologists say, we've been eating fermented foods mm-hmm. our entire history. Mm-hmm. So that can't be a cause of problems, because people who didn't have television, they didn't have smartphones, they had a lot of time on their hands to look at what was going on with them. And so if they ate something and then they felt a certain way, they paid attention and they told mm-hmm. their friends. Mm-hmm. So these things would have been weeded out many, many centuries ago.
Yeah, I mean, really,
if they weren't good for us.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I studied anthropology in college is that they're really, you know, apropos of what you just stated, there really is wisdom in traditional cultures, because while they didn't have, you know, high-tech science and, you know, mass spectrometers and electron microscopes, they still had a lot of empirical study of what worked and what didn't work for health. And so we have a body of knowledge in traditional Chinese medicine, for example, in European herbal medicine, and in gastronomic science, you know, where certain things prove useful and certain things prove harmful. And for centuries, fermented foods, in all cultures of the world, have been a great way of preserving foods, making the nutrients in foods more available, but also, restoring balance in the gastrointestinal tract. So, you know, I think that, tradition needs to be honored, as well as, you know, some of these high-tech scientific findings.
It provides a useful filter for the nonsense that sometimes is coming through. But our ancestors might not have known the why. That's where science excelled. But they do pretty much know the what, because they paid attention. That's why I always say about Chinese medicine. For thousands of years, they were really watching closely. And observation can be pretty powerful. You don't have to have it always in a white jacket.
To switch gears slightly, recently I came across a study that it's not about supplements, but it's actually about brain imaging, but it has tremendous implications for our understanding of how supplements might help us with one of our most dread conditions, which is Alzheimer's disease. I don't know if you saw it just out. It's a study that allows scientists now to image glutathione levels within the brain, you know, without doing a brain biopsy, but just using a special type of imaging technique. It shows where the glutathione is in the brain and where the glutathione is deficient. And what they found is that in Alzheimer's disease, well, it's clearly a glutathione deficiency disorder. And buried in that article is, you know, paragraph 11, is the suggestion that maybe, just maybe, supplementing glutathione might be beneficial for people who suffer from cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease. What a concept, huh?
Oh, yeah, really. What it tickles me is that virtually every study ends by saying, but we're not prepared to recommend
exactly.
that you do this. Yeah. More study is needed, in parentheses. Give us another grant, please. But, yeah, and what can it hurt? It can only help you detoxify a lot of these organophosphate pesticides and the heavy metals and the junk that we're taking in every day from our contaminated food supply. So when something can't hurt you, might help, could have a lot of fringe benefits, what's the harm in trying it while we're waiting for them to come up with some magic bullet to reverse a problem we probably caused ourselves?
And so this is a good segue to let our listeners know that Essential Formulas had originally, their portfolio was exclusively Dr. Hira's probiotic, which was fine because, you know, that's just a wonderful all-purpose probiotic. But recently they acquired the licensing for a unique probiotic, a probiotic that generates glutathione within the gastrointestinal tract, where it can then be absorbed into the systemic circulation, and then it can go to the brain where it can be utilized. And that product is called RegActive. And we're going to talk about that in part two. Are you ready to share some details on your experiences with that?
Oh, yeah. Love to talk about that.
Great. Okay, we're talking to Marty Whittakin. She's certified clinical nutritionist and author of The Probiotic Cure, and an expert in all things related to the microbiome. and a kindred spirit, because, you know, I've learned a lot from Marty in terms of her understanding of how probiotics work. It's not just by populating our gastrointestinal tract. There are many ways in which they influence our health. And we're going to discuss glutathione and more aspects of probiotic wellness in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.